Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Denver is Marcus Funk. Marcus is a partner at Perkins Coie. He's also the author of the chapter Anti-Bribery and Corruption Compliance Programs. That's in the 2024 Complete Compliance and Ethics Manual. Marcus, thanks for taking time out of your day to talk to us. Thanks for contributing to the manual. And let's just get right into it. When it comes to FCPA and avoiding getting caught up in the corruption schemes, a lot of emphasis tends to be placed on the risk of third parties, basically sales agents and suppliers paying bribes in the course of their work for a given company. Let's talk about onboarding them. When onboarding a new vendor, what should companies be looking for and what should they be communicating to their suppliers?
Sure. And Adam, great to be with you. We still see third party risk as the greatest risk. And in the many years of doing this work, I have run into very few companies that explicitly authorized misconduct. It's almost always the conduct of a third party. And so one of the things we look for are really at the front end, that they have credibility, that this is a known entity, that the entity has done business, that they're being hired by us for good reasons, which is to say because they know what they're doing and they're good at what they do, rather than that they are related to, let's say, a foreign official, and that's really the only the only credential that they have.
Yeah, and that's a good word for the wise, and it's been a persistent problem throughout. All the talk tends to be on the third parties, but there is internal risk as well. Companies aren't immune from their people internally paying bribes. How should they stay on top of their internal risks to avoid causing themselves problems?
I mean, the internal risk is a big one. Frankly, that's also a great opportunity. In other words, if you have your finance team, for example, appropriately sensitized to look for what are suspicious payments, you have a good invoice payment procedure, you know, standard subcontract agreements, all those things. Not only do they help avoid internal risk, which obviously you deal with through discipline, but also, and perhaps more importantly, if you can turn your internal resources into allies, they're going to be in the best position to identify potential misconduct by vendors.
And having as many allies and eyes on this issue as possible is always the best. Now, the last few years have been relatively quiet from an FCPA perspective. There have been some very large cases, to be sure, but the pace of disposition seems to have slowed markedly. What's going on from your sense, and what does it mean for compliance programs?
That's the big question, right? Which is, to what extent is the lack of or perceived lack of enforcement, what impact is that having on the compliance world generally, our ability to persuade, frankly, boards with limited resources to allocate a lot of their resources to compliance? I'll offer a quick observation, Adam, on the DOJ's enforcement. I mean, one of the big questions we have is the fact that they're not public facing dispositions doesn't necessarily mean that they're not a whole raft of investigations that are being discussed. And frankly, I think companies and counsel are being more sophisticated these days in terms of being proactive, coming to the government, identifying issues and resolving issues. And so there may well be a large number of cases that are being disposed of through informal channels rather than external facing channels. But the big, I mean, very practically speaking, as we know, life and business are all resource allocation issues, and the lack of enforcement has made it more difficult to persuade companies, particularly companies that have not been in trouble yet, or have not yet been in trouble and do not have well-established policies and procedures that they should spend money to get things in order. That was an easier sell, let's say, 4 years ago than it is today.
And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if this is in fact a part of a trend. I mean, it's great if companies are identifying the problems coming forward and things are getting, you know, resolved in quick, quiet, simple ways. But the hard part is for everybody else, it sort of says, well, there's nothing going on, when in fact, as you point out, there may in fact be a lot going on. Now, late last year, we had a potential game changer. Congress passed the Foreign Extortion Prevention Act, which addresses the demand side of corruption. There'd been a lot of criticism over the years by business that there were a lot of penalties under U.S. law for paying bribes, but foreign government officials were operating with relative impunity. What impact do you think this law will have on bribe solicitation and also on anti-corruption programs?
It's a great question, and I hate to be a party pooper on this because I'm a little suspicious of how much of a real-world impact this is going to have, and the primary reason is the extraterritorial application and how much are we really going to enforce these rules. Now, maybe I handled the appeal for Joel Eskenazi, and obviously some of these issues of came up in terms of recipients of bribes. But the real question is going to be, to what extent are we dissuading, disincentivizing people from accepting or making bribe requests overseas? And that's going to be directly tied to how often do we seek to enforce this law? How often do we try to gather evidence abroad, have them, have people extradited, work with foreign authorities? And I suppose one can be cynical, but if right now, if the reporting is true that there's just a lag in domestic U.S. Enforcement of anti-bribery laws, FCPA Travel Act, there's no reason to believe that there's going to be a spike in what's much more complicated, which is bringing someone from overseas to the United States to have them held accountable for soliciting bribes. And so I guess time will tell, but from where I'm sitting right now and based on the current trends that we discussed, I'm a little more skeptical that this will make the impact that some of the commentators have predicted.
Well, I think it will definitely take patience. I mean, it did take years before there was the first FCPA prosecution under the law. So let's close by talking about investigations. In the past, FCPA tends to be enforced mostly through companies doing investigations and uncovering issues, as I understand it. Is that still the case, or are we seeing a more active or proactive Department of Justice?
I think that's still the case. And that is to say, I think, and everything I've seen indicates that the FCPA unit still is very active, and they still very much rely on outside counsel to bring them the results of their investigation and to negotiate resolutions, quite different from other areas of enforcement where the government is proactive, building cases, you know, using wiretaps, et cetera. So the FCPA unit is still, in a sense, reactive in the way that they investigate, which is to say that people come to them with a situation and report what has happened and then negotiate a resolution. So I think that approach, there's no indication that's going to change. And it seems to be the way the DOJ is going to continue to build their cases for both practical reasons and because they frankly don't need to do, in most cases, much more than that.
Well, like everything else with FCPA, it'll be interesting to see how things evolve over the long term and over this medium term as we try and see, are we in an era where attention has waned from the Department of Justice, or have companies gotten much better at preventing these kinds of incidents? And in that case, we really have a win here from a compliance perspective. Well, Marcus, thank you for sharing these insights with us today. I want to thank you also for writing the chapter, Anti-Bribery and Corruption Compliance Programs, in the 2024 Complete Compliance and Ethics Manual. Finally, I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.